Before we get started with today's show, I want to tell you about another great ESPN podcast, The C.J. McCollum Show, where every week New Orleans Pelicans star C.J. McCollum discusses names and storylines in and around the NBA with inside perspective you can only get from someone in the locker room and on the floor. That's The C.J. McCollum Show. Listen where you are listening to this podcast. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to The Right Time. My name is Bomani Jones. Thanks for listening wherever you listen to podcasts. Thanks for watching us on YouTube. Rate us, review us, give us 5 stars. You only give us 4 stars, I'm inclined to believe. You are a hater. It is that time of week where we have a guest join us, bringing somebody new in. Check him out with us covering college football. Also, check him out on Around the Horn, Harry Lyles Jr. What's going on, man?
What's going on, man? It's good to be here.
Yeah, man. Glad to have you. I see you got the fly hotel room set up in there. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, you know, just I made a last second trip up here to Evansville, Indiana to see my family. And I was like, I didn't want to be like, yo, tell my aunt and uncle, yo, I'm pulling up on them just like that. So I was like, let me respect their space. Let me go ahead and get a quick little hotel here. So
hold on now. You could tell the other part of the truth. This happens, right? This is something that people don't know about this job as you do it. And you have a traveling job, right? Mm-hmm. So they send you all over the place.
Oh, yeah.
It affects the way you view accommodations. It changes the way that your accommodations are viewed, and it makes sleeping in that room in somebody's house far less attractive than it had been previously.
It don't hurt, right? I mean, especially once and you've done as much traveling as I've done this year, and you start racking up, you know, just points and miles and all that type of stuff, that I was like, wait a second, people could actually get this much, right? Like, now it's opened up a whole different world for me, man. Like, I'm a pretty simple dude, but now I'm like, all right, hold on a second, like, maybe I can get a little picky here.
Oh no, I'm looking forward to the day that you're like, what does this ticket say, seat 12A? That's a little bit farther back in the parade,
right? Yeah,
than I'm accustomed to. That day is coming. It happened to me. I'm a simple man. I didn't think I needed very much. I remember when I was in college and I was like, I mean, how is it that anybody could think that they was too good for the Hampton Inn?
Yeah.
Oh, I now understand how it comes about.
Yeah, I'm finally getting there. Because, I mean, even there were like a couple hotels we had this year where I was like, hold on a second. Like, what's up? Like, why, we can do better than this, right?
But see, that's you covering college football, so they send you out to, like, all the places. Like, unless you want to make that hour and a half drive, and sometimes you do, right?
Yeah, sometimes you do. You definitely do.
I remember when I was new at it, I had to go to the town of California, Pennsylvania, right? Like, people may not know this. There's a California University in Pennsylvania. It is in the town, California, Pennsylvania. It's about an hour or so outside of Pittsburgh, and I was going to a heavyweight boxer's camp because, you know, they like to, you know, go off in the middle of nowhere. And I was booking the travel, and I was like, well, hey, what's the closest hotel? And it was a Holiday Inn in a town called Belle Vernon, Pennsylvania. I'm like, oh, I guess that's what it is. I didn't know. Nah, dog, just stay in Pittsburgh. I was unaware that the move is, no, just stay in Pittsburgh and make that drive out there that one time. Because, bruh, I don't know if you've ever been to, like, Jamaica or one of them places. Mm-mm. And it makes you recognize that this interstate highway system and everything else, we got that here. It ain't like that everywhere. You start going, like, up the mountains and then winding roads that ain't got no stripes painted on them. You don't know if it's a one-way. America got a lot of those, too. And a significant number of them are on your way to California, Pennsylvania.
Yeah, I believe that, because I ran into that last year, too, when we were at Penn State. And you had to, like, you fly into Pittsburgh, right? And then it's like, at that point, especially with game day, like, once people know where you're going to be at, like, all the hotels start getting booked immediately. Mm-hmm. And so, like, at that point, it becomes, like you said, that situation where you're like, okay, we got to stay as close as we can, but you're driving through them winding mountains and all this type of stuff like that. And it's like, yo, this is different.
We're going to talk some college football in a minute, but Harry is from Atlanta. And I wonder if you had this phenomenon. I have not been to Penn State. I've just been told about it. But, you know, when you're Southern, we think that, like, we are the ruralist. You know what I mean? Like, they have us believe that once you get out of the South, right, that everything else is one thing. I imagine that in your travels now covering college football, you have gotten a learning about America that you never would have thought that you were getting when you got into this business.
Yeah, no, I mean, 100%. And plus too, like, just all the different places. I don't think people truly realize that, right? Because you hear, like, when we reference certain teams and stuff like that, you hear them talk about, hey, like, we're going to College Station or Oxford or wherever else and stuff like that. And like, you hear those, but like, you never like really see those places. And then when you start seeing those places and you start seeing those people, like, you see that the spectrum of what you think America is a hell of a lot bigger than what you thought, right? I mean, like, we've been to Conway, South Carolina for at least Thursday Night Football this year. We went to Memphis, we went to Oxford, we went to Eugene, Oregon, right? Like, we've been all over the place. We went to Montana State, we went to Bozeman, which, like, I had no idea. This was news to me. I don't know if you knew this, but like, Bozeman is apparently like Rocky Mountain Nashville.
Really?
Like it is, yo, like, the real estate apparently up there, the pricing is insane. Like, it's basically like Nashville with mountains. Like, is how it was explained to me. And so just seeing all them different types of things. And like you said, with like people thinking like we're rural in the South, like, yo, man, let me tell you something. I've seen some of these folks from Ohio and Pennsylvania and stuff like that. I don't want to, like, that's different. You know what I'm saying? Like, that's different.
Oh, they sent you to College Station, huh?
Oh, we did that one last year, yeah. So that was crazy. But I mean, it's just, dude, the variety of people, and especially, dude, you see it on like a week-to-week basis, because I again do a Thursday Night Football with Matt Barry, Lewis Riddick, and then you do College Game Day. And so I'm in two different places a week, and it's like that for 13 weeks straight. And just to constantly, it's like being a dog and sticking your head out the window and you just absorbing all that. Mm-hmm. Like, at one time, like, that's how it's been this year. And it's definitely been a learning experience, I will say that.
Yeah, let me tell you the College Station, because I'm not passing up this chance to take shots. They, you know, Austin always got the keep Austin weird thing. They got to fight to keep it weird. College Station doesn't have to say keep College Station weird. It's just going to be like that. Ain't nobody ever going to try to change it. Because honestly, it's the kind of weird where once you get to it, you like, either you on or you off. I personally am all the way off myself.
Yeah. Now, have you been to Oxford before?
I have not been to Oxford.
It's interesting.
Yeah, I mean, it makes me a little nervous, right? Because, like, I don't know if you know my buddy Wright Thompson, right? Like, you know, he is the biggest Oxford proponent in the world. But see, I'm a little older than you. You did not grow up watching Ole Miss games where the camera shot was all the people waving flags, right? Like you don't have the memories of that. Man, I don't know what it'd take for you to get me to go down there, right? Like, I don't care how dope Wright's tailgate spread is. You're going to need to really, really work on me to make that happen.
Yeah, well, and you know what the interesting part was? So you got to fly into Memphis, right? And then that drive is just, it's something, right? Like, I used to date a girl that was from Shelby, North Carolina, right? And so we were driving from Atlanta one time to Shelby. And you ever just know sometimes when you're driving through somewhere and you're like,
yes,
I don't know about all this. Like, this feels very, you know, Jim Crow. It feels very like reconstruction. Like, and you're like, yeah, I could tell, like, this used to be bad. Like, right through this, like, stretch of road right here. Like, I don't want to know what I'm going to see. Right. If I go 10 feet off the road, whatever, like, it's just like spooky. Like, that's the way it is on that drive from Memphis to Oxford. And then when you get to Oxford, I mean, it's just, you know, it's different. It's different. I'll leave it at that.
Yeah. Let me tell you about them stretches of drive, though. We are going to talk about some football at some point, people. Don't you worry. But, you know, I'm from Houston, and we would make them drives from Houston to Oakdale, a little town in Louisiana that my daddy's from, and go on I-10. And I'm here to tell you, once you get east of Houston and, like, between there and, like, Lafayette, it don't always feel safe. You know what I mean? Like, there's this little town called Vida in East Texas. And it was one of those that when in the 90s, I was growing up, the white people were up in arms because the black people were trying to move into the projects. And that is always your ultimate sign, by the way. When the projects are full of white people, it is bad news for you, right? They ain't even letting us do that. You know what I'm saying? Okay. So something happened. Car died. I'm with like two or three of my uncles, and this is in a non-cell phone era. We just stuck on the side of the road, and it was that stretch of I-10 where it's like, ooh, I don't know what's going on. And so I don't remember how we got to the gas station. I guess we hoofed it up the freeway. You know, we somehow we wound up at a gas station waiting on somebody to come help us. And while there was the fear of, you know, the other kind of element, different than the element that me and Dominique normally talk about, there was also that element that me and Dominique talk about. And I just remember this woman walked up to my uncle, this black woman. I don't know what her story was, but apparently we were the new fellas in town. You know what I'm saying? She walked up to my uncle, gave him an up and down and said, "Who you belong to?" And I'm just here to tell you, all those stretches of treacherous road that you described, there's all kinds of things that might come up and not always the one that you expect.
No, not at all, man. I mean, that's why, like, hey, like, if you don't got my policy, because, you know, I do road trips, whatever, like, I drive up here, right? It's 5.5 mm-hmm. hour drive. I'm used to making it, been making it my entire life. There are certain places where you could tell, like, you know what? You can just go a little bit further down the road. Just stay in the car. Stay in the car.
You're not gonna run out of gas yet.
No. Yeah. Like, if you don't know your car, you better figure it out. Like, find out how much further you can go before you absolutely gotta stop.
Yeah, it's hard to make me feel shook. The closest I got, I had to get out the car in Eastern Kentucky one time. And, you know, I just went in, got what I needed, got out, but I could tell that everybody was on the same program. Get in, get what you need, get out. And it was cool. I figured it out. Now, I'm going to get to the football part, and you as an Atlanta dude, Georgia's number one. Mm-hmm. I actually went to Ann Arbor for a game earlier. I went to the Michigan State game, and I saw them play, and they seem to be a fine football team, but it seems to be Georgia and then everybody else. I have been surprised by hearing the people make the argument that I'm voting Michigan number one right now, because I just feel like all you got to do is put Georgia on the television and you recognize they play in a different caliber of football than everybody else is.
Yeah, 100%. And I think, too, like, people's issue with Georgia, and I don't think a lot of people actually realize it, is sometimes Georgia, man, dude, they're playing with their food sometimes. I mean, like, you can't look at that team, even just coming off the bus, right? They look different than everybody else except for, like, Alabama, right? I mean, they are different. Even if you just look at their tight end room, like, are you kidding me? Right? Like who does that? Like two freaks of nature, right? In Washington and Bowers. And they
and different really types of freaks in nature, by the way.
Yes, exactly. Like, they can do it all. They could do both, you know what I mean? And then you look at their running backs, like, they really haven't even gotten the running game going in the way that they probably should. And then defensively, I mean, they still got dudes, man. Like, those guys are going to be pros. And so that's been my biggest gripe with them too. But, like, looking at that Michigan-Ohio State game, my other biggest criticism of Ohio State has been, I feel like they always play down to their competition. And I feel like they did that against Michigan because Michigan was banged up in that game. And the whole thing was like, okay, well, they're not going to be able to run the football, so you got to make J.J. McCarthy beat you. And in theory, he shouldn't be able to do that. And he did that. And then they also got them big chunk run plays on you anyways. But in terms of, like, if you're putting money on it, why would you bet anybody but Georgia? I mean, just because strictly if they play 50% of their game well, they're going to beat you probably.
Man, look, I have joked for many years that apparently there is a state law somewhere that the University of Georgia must have at least one white man in every pass pattern that is run on this campus for my whole life. I don't know. He always the quarterback's roommate, whatever it is. I don't know how that works out right now, because they be sending two white dudes out in the pass pattern this year. They got Brock Bowers and then Ladd McConkey. And for those of you who are not familiar with college football, I want to be clear. I said McConkey, McConkey. Do not add any letters that are not there. And I had looked at, because I knew Bowers was the truth, right? But I had looked at McConkey as, like, satisfying the state law. Dude, he out here running past people too, right? Like he's a giant and he's out here running past people too.
It's
unfair
ridiculous.
Everywhere.
Yeah, like, he's ridiculous. I think it was, gosh, who did they play? I want to say it wasn't UAB. It was somebody, though, where it was like in the first, like, 8 seconds of the game, he literally just ran past the defense. He didn't run no right pitch, right? He didn't make no move. He just went, right? And even with Ladd McConkey, when they played Tennessee, he like, literally did, like, the Randy Moss thing where, like, he broke, made, like, one move, and
hand.
You saw the hand. He threw up the hand. I was like, there's no way. And, I mean, the way that they were celebrating, I think that might have been, like, the first or second score of that game. I was like, I looked over at Harry Douglas, who's one of my co-hosts with Countdown to Game Day. I was like, hey, this is not the day for Tennessee. No. And it wasn't. Like, that was something, like, there's obviously all these SEC stadiums are loud, right? But like, whether it was Tennessee this year or I was at the Arkansas game last year too, where Georgia just annihilated them. Like, there is a different experience when a team is just steamrolling you like that, right? It's almost like someone is pushing you in the chest and just you're right, like backpedaling and stuff like that. You can't stop. Like, that is the most incredible thing I think that I've experienced in the 2 years doing this.
It was funny about that Tennessee game. I was talking to my brother who doesn't really follow college football, and he had seen that Georgia had put the hurt on him. And he said, you know, I don't even really watch, but I could tell, you know, I could tell Tennessee just wasn't really that good. I was like, no, that's not what the issue was. The issue was they were playing the Monstars.
Yeah. Like, I don't think people like truly like realize that. And that's honestly one of the things that I love about college football is obviously, especially in the SEC, like the talent is there, right? Like, we're talking about some of the best players. I mean, it's minor league football, basically. But the fact that you still have those guys that are just good enough to where you get that basically like that high school, like urban legend type of guys,
Yes.
like those performances. That's what to me makes Brock Bauer so fun is like he's still out there with like incredible athletes and then he makes them look like children.
Yes.
Like that is one of the most to me like artistic and beautiful things about college football is we're watching a high quality product, but however, there's still those guys where it's like, nope, that's different.
Yo, and the thing is with Georgia, and I got myself in a little trouble earlier this year. I walked something a little bit back that I'd said before, but because they're so loaded, even to this day, national championship notwithstanding, the only place that you could ever think to ask a question is the quarterback. It's the only one because he is literally the least talented person on the field. And but like I almost feel like there are NFL players who would be less talented than the people that are on the field, right? Like you could create that scenario. But I said earlier this year, this is before it all fell apart for Florida, that I would rather have Anthony Richardson as my quarterback. The Stetson Bennett, and as you might imagine, our good friends at Georgia did not appreciate that at all. Yeah, Anthony Richardson hasn't played as well as I expected him to play this year, so I'm going to take that back. But my point really simply was, I want the high ceiling guy. I always want the high ceiling guy. Like I felt like if you put high ceiling ass Anthony Richardson on that team where he didn't really have to do that much, it would honestly be comedy. Like there's no telling what it would be. But Bennett, he is a good college quarterback. You know what I mean? Like I think that
For sure.
there was an era where you had more of those than you do now because everybody's basically evaluated in the context of the pros, right? Like that's how this goes. But he's not as good as Colt McCoy was in college, obviously, but I think that's a comparison that you can make. Like he's that level of dude. But if Georgia's gonna lose, the only way is if he don't do it.
And I mean, you know, I'm with you in that boat too, where it's like, okay, so if you lose, are you going to be happy with that being the reason, given all the other insanely talented players around him, right? At positions where, you know, I don't know that you necessarily have to say it's more skilled because I do think playing quarterback is obviously a very skilled thing that you have to do. But when you do look to your point at an Anthony Richardson, you're like, wait, I can have that at that position around all the other guys that I've got? Like, how could you say no to that? But to your point, I think it is weirder for people watching that because you don't have as many Stetson Bennetts anymore looking like that college quarterback that, like, all right, like, he's good enough. He's going to get it done. He's probably not going to play pro, whatever. When it feels like there's more Anthony Richardsons out there now than there are Stetson Bennetts. And if you're Georgia and you're Kirby Smart, like, hey, bro, like, why does it stop right there? Right? Like, why wouldn't you have something like that? But Stetson, I will say, man, we saw him at SEC Media Day at the beginning of the year, and he walked with his chest out a little bit more, right? Talking a little bit more confident, a little bit more spicy. And it showed up in places at times during the season. So, I mean, if they get that from him, you know, against LSU, I don't really think they're going to need it against LSU, but if they can get that there and in the playoff, you know, I think they're in business.
You know, I think the power of confidence, like what I watched, I think it was in the Tennessee game I was watching him, and he hit me and it was like, oh, the difference is confidence. Because especially with playing quarterback in particular, where so much of it is, I need to make a decision to do something right now. Like one, two, three, boom. One, two, three, four, five, boom. Like whatever it is, you need to be decisive and you just need to go ahead and make that happen. And that's a confidence thing, right? Like, oh, I'm thinking about this, I'm thinking about that. Stetson Bennett is like, I am national champion Stetson Bennett, baby. And I can only imagine how good his life is walking around the University of Georgia. Good gracious. And he plays with that confidence.
100%. And enough confidence to where it's like, because I know you've probably seen the pictures, right? some of these haircuts he's getting, I'm like, hey brother, who you going to see to get your haircut? Right?
Yeah,
Like who on the team told you, like, hey man, come get your cut with us. Right?
Yeah.
Come get this fade. You know what I mean? Like,
I want to know when the day is that the white guy just decides, hey man, you think they can cut my hair too? Right? Because like, if I go to the white man barbershop, they will tell me they cannot cut my hair, right?
Yeah.
But black people, black means like 18 different things, right? They yes. could cut anybody's hair in yep. there. And I just like, I would love to know the process for the white man when he just finally decides, you know what? I'm going to do it.
Right, I know it. And hey, you notice, I don't think he did that until after they won the title, right? So like, he was clearly like, hey man, hold on a second. Yo, Nate, like Kendall, where are you guys going, man? I'm gonna come get my hair cut, y'all, right? This barbershop stuff, it's like LeBron's show, right? Like I can sit yeah. there and hang out, right? They got Mark Cuban up in there.
Well, do you watch P-Valley?
Mm-mm.
Okay, there's a character in P-Valley I'm gonna send you a picture of after we do yeah. the show. He look a little bit like Stetson Bennett. And I'm just saying, it's entirely possible that this has been Stetson Bennett's calling the whole time. Like, if you look real fast,
yeah.
you might have been like, huh, can you run that back? Like, you drop him off in a different context. Stetson Bennett is an Opelousas all-star. That's what I called him. If I dropped him off in Louisiana, yeah. in one of them yep. towns, your interpretation might go a little different. Think, just
yeah.
look at that hair. You know what
yeah,
I'm saying?
Yeah, that texture, right. I know.
Yeah. See.
It's the texture, right.
You
100%.
Know, you spend too much of your life with people looking at you trying to do the math. Now you get to do it on Stetson Bennett. You know what I'm
yep,
saying?
Exactly.
It's right there. It's not rude. It's curiosity. That's all it is. We just trying to figure these things out. I watch USC play a full game. Well, it's close to a full game for the first time in the Notre Dame game. I was on a plane. And I just can't imagine how furious you have to be if you're an Oklahoma fan and you're like Caleb Williams. That was supposed to be us. That was supposed to be us. If you were an Oklahoma fan and you were watching Josh Heupel kill it as Brent Venables struggled, and then you were looking at Lincoln Riley and Caleb Williams dominate at USC, what is your life?
Yeah, I mean, fury, right? Because even going back to Brent Venables, a lot of people tried to say, well, you know, he's actually like the brains behind Clemson because that defense is like, you can't touch it, right? Like, that's been the one constant, even with like, and I always, when I talk about Clemson, I try to be like realistic about like, hey, like, yes, Dabo has done a very good job up to this point. I think that tide is changing a little bit with, you know, he had two generational quarterbacks. And I think people kind of forget that and kind of expect that to be the standard. Like, dude, we're not talking about, you know, I'm trying to think of some like, you know, not a Stetson Bennett and not like a Cam Newton, but like somewhere in the middle there where right. it's like, okay, like this guy is good. No, we're talking about two guys that are closer to the Cam Newton spectrum, end of the spectrum, than the Stetson Bennett end of the spectrum. Because that defense is one thing where even on their worst days, like they were going to make stuff happen. And so you got that guy and thought, okay, like we'll still be able to do all the offensive things that we do at Oklahoma. And now we're going to be able to play that kind of defense. And now you don't. And like you said, you see Heupel, and you see Lincoln Riley and you see Caleb Williams out here slanging it, you know, with the painted fingernails and the glam and all that type of stuff like that. Like that's tough sledding, man. And they lost to like West Virginia this year. I mean, yes.
It got
destroyed
by Texas.
By Texas. Yeah. I mean, in a game, and I think Texas, hadn't they lost the week before?
Yeah, it wasn't looking good for Texas up until that point. And I have watched basically every incarnation of that game for the last 30-something years. It's never looked anything close to that. Not even the year that Vince and them destroyed them. It didn't look anything like that. It was mind-blowing. Even in John Blake, Oklahoma, OU did not look as bad as they looked in that game. I'd never seen that program look that bad before.
No, it's shocking. And to me, I still feel like even though Oklahoma, I wouldn't say necessarily is on the same level, obviously, as an Ohio State, as an Alabama, I'll throw Georgia in there now. Like you expect them to be top 10 talent-wise and just competitive-wise at worst, right? Mm-hmm. So like they shouldn't be getting their doors blown off by Texas like that. And nope. Like this year, it's been like, dude, like, I mean, there's not a whole lot that they do well consistently, right? Like there's, you know, moments here and there, but it's like, yo, like what is like, it's not supposed to be like this, right? Like you're supposed to be able to walk into that job and keep that thing going. Like that is a hard one to mess up, right? Like I feel like if you were to walk into that job, if you were to walk into Ohio State, Alabama, Georgia, and you're not able to just keep that thing going, that says more about you than it does, I think, about the job.
Yeah, that's an interesting list there because I feel like Ohio State is the one that it's impossible not to keep it rolling.
Yeah.
And I say that because everybody has kept it rolling, more or less, right? Like John Cooper had some ups and downs or whatever. Alabama, Ohio State has a higher floor. Alabama has the low floor where it can bottom out and you go 4-7 and everybody hates you and they throw bricks to your windshield and everything else. But everybody who's been at Alabama has won. Then you get the weird job like the one that just got filled at Auburn where you will probably have a 10-win season and you will probably leave in some measure of shame and disgrace. And if you want to make sure to keep that that kind of streak rolling, why don't you bring in a dude with a lot of wins and even more red flags? And that is what they did. They went and got Hugh Freeze.
Yeah. And it's, I mean, to me, the most interesting thing about Auburn is, so the Freeze hire feels par for the course with them, right? So like that part of it, I'm just kind of like, you know, like, and you know, I don't know that like when people hear the word boosters, right? Because they're the ones hiring, they're the ones making the decisions. I don't think people realize like who they're talking about most of the time. Because I think a lot of this wouldn't be like so surprising that they're able to overlook shortcomings of his and missteps, as we're calling them, without making amends, right? To me, the more interesting thing about this entire process has been how Lane was handling it. Because he, from the beginning of the year, right, Lane was talking about, well, you know, it'd be nice if our facilities were better. It'd be nice if, you know, we had more money in the collective. All these things that would not be issues at Auburn, right? Like, just wouldn't be something he would have to think about. And even going into the Egg Bowl, a game that I did last week, and we were talking to him about it, he was like, look, like, there hasn't been an offer. There hasn't been this, that, and the other. And it hasn't been discussed at that point. It was discussed later on. But talking to us about it, and then when he was talking to the local media, he was very, very intentional about being like, look, I haven't talked about this. I haven't taken anything. But also, it would be nice if the leak would stop, or if the roof would stop leaking in the facility, right? And so, like, his way of, like, leveraging that and getting more, because this is what, like, his fourth contract that he's had there. He's been there for 2 or 3 years. Like, I see the hustle, man. Like, and it's funny because he still, even if he took that Auburn job, would still fit, like, their whole billing, right? Like, of the guys that they hire. But with Freeze, man... Good luck with that one, I guess.
No, man, this is a Jimmy Sexton special. For people who don't know, Jimmy Sexton is like the super agent for the coaches, who has an amazing knack for having like three clients in the running for any one gig. If there is a job that comes open in the SEC, the first call they're making is Jimmy. Jimmy, who do you think that we should put into this job? And I just imagine Jimmy being like, I'm going to turn this into $9 million a year for Lane, and I'm going to get Hugh out of there. That's what's going to be the plan, because for Ole Miss, now that they have shaken off most of the Confederacy from their steeds, like there's a whole generation of kids that honestly has no idea why somebody like me would not even entertain the possibility of Ole Miss. They out there wearing hoodies that say come to the sip with pictures of Mississippi on it. Like, yo, whoa, what? Like, they just realize, okay, we no longer want to be racist more than we want to be good at football, right? Yep. Like, it's still a, you know, a little push-pull, but they decided there was levels they wasn't willing to go. Okay, so Lane's getting $9 million a year to coach a job that is really a 7-8-win job, and maybe he can make it a 9-win job consistently, and maybe that's what makes it worth it for him to get my $9 million a year. They ain't never going to be any real pressure on him to win anything for real. I don't believe that school has ever been to the SEC championship game, and I don't believe that they ever will. And just for context on that, everybody else in that division, other than Texas A&M, who hadn't been there for very long, has been to the SEC championship game except for Ole Miss.
Yep.
Everybody else has made it. And he get $9 million a year to do that job.
At Ole Miss.
Yes,
At Ole Miss,
right.
man.
At Ole Miss, and he could have taken $9 million or something like that to go to Auburn. But man, that job just does not look like it'll make you happy in any form or fashion. And now Hugh Freeze is down there, and I'm like, sir, you need to be on your P's and on your Q's, because he has never been anywhere with the level of scrutiny that he's about to receive. He got caught up because Houston, I don't think people appreciate the wildness of the Hugh Freeze story. Houston Nutt was doing a FOIA request to try to figure out who at Ole Miss leaked something to a reporter, and along the way stumbled across his replacement calling escorts on the road.
Yes, and all the meanwhile, Ole Miss knew and Hugh Freeze knew that most of the violations that they were being investigated for were not from Houston Nutt, which is what they sold until it finally came out where it was like, oh, wait, no, these aren't under Houston Nutt. Like, that piece of it is incredible to me. And one other angle with Hugh Freeze that, and I can't help but do this, but I always kind of do this with college athletics because I think a lot of people like to talk about it when it's hot and not all the time in terms of something that actually does need to be fixed. And that's obviously like player compensation and how we talk about these guys. To me, if you are one of these people that says the kids don't need to be compensated because they're there to get an education, right? They're there to be formed as young men, all these things like that. I come from a family of educators. If you believe that, I understand. I 100% believe people should get second chances. That is something that I think, as long as you show that you've learned from your mistake and, you know, made amends and all that type of stuff like that, you should be given that opportunity. If you believe college football to be something where you do get an education, and you're there to be formed as a young man, and then you go on about your business, that's not somebody that you hire. And so to me, that is another argument, albeit a smaller one, for why we have to compensate the players and pay them as such, because you would not do that if you believe this to be strictly an educational endeavor. No. And so to me, like, I just, you know, it's incredible all around, man. And then, you know, kind of going back to your point with Lane and at Ole Miss, I think the thing with Auburn that is so interesting is them in Nebraska and in some ways South Carolina, you've seen those three fan bases, because of the college football playoff, sort of become a little bit more unrealistic with their expectations, right? And because, like, to your point, if Lane kept this thing at an 8 or 9 win clip, like, they're going to get sick of him, because now it's the playoff. And if you're not in the playoff, then, like, we don't care about the rest of this, which is poisonous to me for the sport. And I don't know that that's going to end particularly well, but I do think that'll get to a point where they're going to be like, all right, bro, like, we're paying you $9 million. You're not making the playoff. Like, what's up?
Yeah. I mean, the playoff hasn't made things more fun. It's made people more money. It hasn't made things more fun. And then contracts like the Jimbo contract, the Mel Tucker contract, those are the two that really jump out, that get you to the now everybody makes $9 million a
year. Hey, bro, when they saw Mel get, what was it, $9 million?
Yeah.
They saw Mel get $9 million and said, what about me?
I was like, yo, when Mel got $9 million, I really was like, damn, were they really that good? Like, I was just like, I mean, you just got here. Jimbo at least had the argument that, A, he has a national championship and had been to the playoff the following year. But then it was also Texas A&M, and they're crazy, and they had people with all kinds of money, and the price of crew was running high. Like, it was a perfect storm. Matt Rhule getting $9.5 million over 8 years at Nebraska. First, I think it's a great hire. Like, I have been saying for months, there's nobody else for Nebraska to really make a move for. That's the guy that you need to bring in. Okay, cool. They went and did that. But how good can Nebraska be at this point? Because what I think people don't get is they're like, yo, it's not going to be the 80s and 90s anymore. You're correct. But the big issue is you could recruit dudes into the Big Eight that you say you can't get to play college football anywhere. Like, the admission standards were just completely different at that time, and they were getting a whole lot of dudes that shall we say needed to leave home. Right,
100%.
This ain't the game no more. Like, I think they'll get players because they want it, right? As long as you want it. Their thing is, I think they looked up and they're just like, there's no compelling reason why we should not be better than Wisconsin, which I would probably say if I were Nebraska also. And then Wisconsin was like, oh, look at who we're about to hire to be our coach. We're going to get a really good one too.
Hey, man, I know they saw that and their hearts sank. Because Luke Fickell is going to kill that job, man. Like he is going to do so well there. My thing with Nebraska is I think I'm 30 years old. I think I am probably part of the last generation that remembers looking at Nebraska being like, okay, no, like they should win titles, right? Like I remember the Eric Crouch years. I remember them playing Miami. Like to me, that was like the cutoff between them being like nationally title relevant and then whatever Bo Pelini was, right? Like the 8 wins, stuff like that. And then what they are now, if Matt Rhule doesn't get that right, like I think we're talking about something completely different with them where I actually don't know if you can revive that.
No.
Just because, in my opinion, and like we try to like gauge how coaches like feel about this with NIL in particular, in terms of like, hey, like there's like kids that are like committing to places and they never visit and stuff like that. And so I'm thinking if I'm an 18, 19-year-old, bro, do I want to go to Lincoln? Especially because like I don't know Nebraska to be good,
Right.
honestly. And now when you go back and you kind of you look at like videos like Tommy Frazier, even if you go look at videos of Eric Crouch, right, in 2000, 2001, you're like, that looks like a long time ago. They haven't, you know what I'm saying? Like they haven't been popping, like, right, like Nebraska football. You haven't been afraid of Nebraska football since television been in high definition, basically, right? Like you really haven't, aside from like the 1 year with Ndamukong Suh, which like they weren't going to win the title that year. But to me, I think that's going to be more impactful. And we're going to see that kind of evolve the sport here in the next 5, 10, 15, 20 years, just because I think that's the thing, man, with social media. Like, if kids don't know Nebraska to be good, like, they're not going to go because, like, yo, like, they used to be popping back in the day. Not in
Yeah,
our, not in their day, not close
right.
enough to their day.
Once Nebraska left the Big 12, how exactly were they supposed to get players? You know what I mean? Like, that was the thing that lost me. Like, I mean, Arkansas leaving the Southwest Conference, going to the SEC, the same thing was, okay, so now why would Texas kids come play here? Because the part of Texas that Arkansas borders is not the part that produces players, right? You're not going to get those guys. You're not going to get good players out of Louisiana going to the SEC. Like, where are you going to get players? Like, to me, Texas and Oklahoma making the move to the SEC, the biggest point for them is it'll make it easier for us to get players now. Like, we're watching all the players go out of Texas. We don't have a compelling reason to get any of the players in the SEC footprint to come in here. Like, you had to hold on to players at some point. And so when Nebraska went to the Big Ten, you're moving into the part of the Big Ten that doesn't produce players. So why, like, the Texas guys aren't coming there anymore. When Missouri went to the SEC, the Texas guys stopped going there. Where are you supposed to get players from?
Yeah, 100%. And I mean, Tom Luganville and I did College Football Live last year, and he did a very good in-depth explanation as to why that move in particular is going to make it damn near impossible for them in the future, just because it's certainly not the same. And even to your point in terms of the SEC, like obviously kind of putting that as your actual like region now. The other thing with this is, and we spoke with Jackson Dart about this before the Egg Bowl, USC transfer to Ole Miss. We asked him, like, all right, well, what was attractive about Ole Miss to you? And he's like, dude, I wanted to play in SEC. Right? Like, this is a kid from California. And he's like, strictly to be able to say, like, okay, if I perform here, if I perform in this conference against these players with this team and do moderately well, I'm going to have at least a shot at going pro. And so anytime that you can add that as well, like you're changing the game for yourself because those three letters mean that much.
It's become the Premier League, right? Like, there
Yeah.
are a lot of good leagues that you can play soccer in and you could be a star, but this is the one, like, when you hear about an American that gets to play in the Premier League, we're like, oh yeah, we're getting somewhere, right? Brock Bowers, Napa, California's own, playing for Georgia. Like, it's wild that he would even think to make that move to go do that. Like, you ain't
What
even
culture
got to
shock.
do that, really. Oh, I can only imagine, right?
God.
Right? And it's Athens. We ain't even talk about Atlanta, dog. We talking about
Right.
Athens. I can't imagine that. But I do think, and I wonder one day when these kids are going to pop up and realize, though, man, you can go pro anywhere. One thing the NFL will do is find you. No matter who you are, no matter where you at, they will find you. My favorite, oh, we found him ever. Do you remember that game that Ohio State played against Buffalo, I want to say in 2013, and
Yes.
America met Khalil Mack?
Yep.
Don't you worry, buddies. They will find you one place or another. Somebody gonna find you.
100%. And I mean, some of these like smaller games that we did this year, like Tulsa, Memphis, like there's pro scouts at every game. right? And like those guys talk, right? And so like word gets around. So you definitely can go pro anywhere. It's just so interesting to me how the SEC has really, like you said, like kind of just they put their herbs and spices on it, man, and now everybody wants a piece. You know what I'm
Yeah.
saying?
I would not, and if I was, I would be very considerate of this if I were a player, like particularly if I was a running back or something like that. What's also going to happen to you going to the SEC, man, you're going to have more miles on you than anywhere else. Like those Alabama boys, they play so
Yeah.
many games and they play so hard. The Carfax on them are terrible when they get to the league. I had a scout hit me up one time. He had just gotten to the job and he was, you know, first time he was just like, man, if I could show you what is in these guys' medical reports from playing that. Nah, man, I'd be trying to stay in the pack myself. Be over
Yeah.
there, play a couple games against Oregon State, a little
Right.
wazoo action, take care of myself. Like, if I'm a running back, I want to be in a nice deep rotation. That would be my
Yeah.
argument for going to Georgia as a running back. Oh, cool, man. I'm only going to have to take about 100 carries, and they go see I'm a beast, though.
Yeah. No, 100%, man. I mean, even with somebody like Quinshon Judkins from Ole Miss, like, you know, he's up here, you know, tying, I think he broke Herschel Walker's like freshman rushing record. Like, hey, man. They gonna run you into the ground, bro. You better believe, right? Like, if they're trying to win a title at Ole Miss and you sticking around, hey, it's gonna be on your back, young
Hey,
man. Like they and because just true freshman, man. And you got to think about it too. And a lot of coaches have talked about this to us, like during the year, is specifically with freshmen and sophomores, like younger players like that. They are not used to the season grind and the toll that that actually does take on your body, which is why you do specifically see, especially with running backs, like some of these guys running out of fuel towards the end of the year. Because they are truly that beat up. Like, I think it's easy to sit at home and watch these games and not realize the toll that like this game is taking on their bodies.
you talk about that being a freshman or breaking Herschel Walker's record. Do you know how many carries Herschel Walker took in 3 years at Georgia?
Oh no,
Not
I'm afraid to know.
counting bowl games.
How many?
994.
It's showing up right now.
Every play was just give the ball to Herschel. Do you
Oh my
realize how
God.
good he had to be for
Right?
everybody in the stadium to know the ball is coming to him and they still kept giving him the ball? They
Hey man, there was
still
one
kept
problem
working.
and one solution. And the
That
problem was the defense, and he was the solution, the
was
only one that they needed.
it, boy. And I don't want to talk about it too much, but you living in Atlanta just for the fun part of it. Can you explain to people how wild the ads are on both sides in that Herschel Walker election?
Yo, like if I'm watching stuff on like Hulu, man, it's all I get. It's all I've gotten for the past like 2 months. They are like, I mean, just it's they are there's no chill with none of them, right? Positive or negative with either side. Like part of me is like, is this actually real? Because we're not talking about just like some other candidate, man. We're talking about Herschel Walker,
Yes.
right? We're talking about the push-ups and sit-ups guy, right? Like the guy that picked himself up, right, and became one of the best college football running backs of all time, right? Like just an incredible story. And then it's like, this is what this has become.
Yes.
Like it's truly, man, hard to wrap my head around because growing up, you hear how great this individual was, right? How hardworking he was, how great he was. And then juxtapose that against like what we're doing right now.
Oh no, what he's doing right now is showing you how great he was at football. Because that's the only
That's
reason
it.
why, that's the only reason. Like, you realize how good he had to be at football for this to still
Yeah.
be going. And what people need to know, Herschel ain't showing up nowhere. If he got to wear a jacket and tie, he ain't showing up nowhere where the jacket ain't black and the tie is not red. He is in UGA gear at every turn. Because I imagine, like I say, Herschel played 40 something years ago.
Yeah.
The youngsters who are like, yo, I don't really understand what this Herschel thing is. That's what, right here. The fact that
That's
this can
it.
continue as it is, but then you go turn on them Herschel clips from Georgia, and it's like, oh my God.
Right. Is he allowed to do that?
Yeah, he was a, like, 'cause my brother grew up in Atlanta, and, you know, in that time, he's not Herschel's age, he's younger, right? But his thing was, Herschel was a newspaper superstar. Like when you were, you know, when the newspaper was the only place you got this information, he was a celebrity all over the state of Georgia because what Herschel Walker was doing in Wrightsville, Georgia was leading the sports page. Like he was that dude. And man, it is wild seeing them commercials. He's so good, they don't even really have to talk about the football in the commercials.
No, I don't. I mean, the face and the name do it, man. Like, I really don't think, especially as it pertains to college football, like, if you have left your mark on a place, on a university, what you do after that, it's all
Yeah.
good. Don't matter. Especially in a place like Georgia, man. I cannot tell you, like, when we were at Georgia, Tennessee, the amount of Run Herschel Run sticker on everybody walking around the stadium, and which was both like funny in part because I'm like, damn, bro, is it really like that
Yeah.
easy? And also like terrifying.
But
Just
people also
the
forget that's the only time that Georgia had ever been that good. Like Georgia is not a historical power. Like
Right.
the SEC as it is really a phenomenon of the last 15 to 20 years. But that run that they had is the only time prior to now that they had ever been that good. It was all on the back. He made them feel something, right? Like if Johnny Manziel could have just walked and chewed gum just a little bit, man, the Aggies would have found a way to make him the governor because they had never felt like he had made them feel before.
Yeah, man. I mean, that's a completely different high. And with college football specifically, once you catch that, they're not gonna let it go, man. That's why with South Carolina, it's funny, like, and I'm gonna sound like a Will Muschamp defender here, and I am not. Historically speaking, Spurrier, I think, has their only two 10-win seasons and
Yes.
one of like two 9-win seasons. What Muschamp was doing, winning whatever it was, right? 6 to 7 games, 5 games. That's par for the course for
That's what
y'all.
they do.
That's what y'all do, right? And people get outraged when you like say anything else, right? Well, no, I mean that's just like what it is. Well, no, well, look what Spurrier did. It's like, bro, we're talking about Steve Spurrier,
Yes.
right? Like, even with like Texas, historically, if you look at Texas, like they're not winning the national championship every 5, 10, 15, 20 years, right? But like that's the thing now. And
But
Mac Brown ruined it for, I mean, and you know, Mac Brown ruined it for everybody after him.
yet some,
Everybody after him.
but was also somehow an underachiever while he had the job. It is the
I
most
agree with that.
it's the most impossible thing to explain. Because I mean, Texas' real problem was they were a little late to the black player game,
Yes.
and it affected them for honestly 30 something years, right? Like they won the last national championship with all white players. And then they were just kind of slow to come around to the game. You can look as Oklahoma embraced the idea and Texas resisted it. You can see the fortunes of the program change. The difference, though, between Texas and like a South Carolina is there's no excuse for Texas not to be better. I can
Correct.
make an argument why it is that we overrate the value of them being the University of Texas and Mac over-indexed on in-state recruiting in a way that nobody else could. The problem with Texas is Texas isn't close to anything other than Texas. Therefore, and you can't get the Louisiana guys because the ones that you want are going to go to LSU. So that means you basically got to get all the good ones in Texas. Otherwise, where are you going to get the other guys from? But South Carolina, y'all are the number two program in South Carolina.
Right.
Where is the good supposed to come from? Y'all are a 6.5, right? 6.5 win school. Six or seven, that's probably where you're going to be. Like Mississippi State, did they get their minds back right after Mullen and realize, you know what, we're 6.5. That's about where we are. We're a 6.5 win school.
Yeah, I mean, it's crazy, man. And again, like I said earlier, like the playoff, right, becoming the only prize in most people's minds has ruined this for everybody, right? Like, how are you supposed to get a job at this point and just go out on your own terms? That's not going to happen for anybody. It's not. And it's just so weird to watch how this thing is evolving and is going to continue to evolve, obviously, just within that perspective. And it is unfortunate. You saw this news yesterday about the Rose Bowl
Yeah.
and the playoff. I like that. I
Where
like
the
that they're
Rose
kind
Bowl's
of like
making demands.
they're flexing, right? I
Well,
like that because you should. You're the Rose Bowl.
the Rose Bowl, what people don't get about the Rose Bowl is the Rose Bowl don't give a damn about no college football. The Rose Bowl care about them roses. Like the Rose Bowl is
Parade.
about a level of money that is so far beyond this little football game. They'd like to have the football game. It's a big part of what they do. They don't care about your playoff. They like, look, we are the game that celebrates the great white migration from the Midwest to the West Coast. It's a homecoming game where the Midwesterners who now live on the West Coast now have the Midwesterners who need to just get a little warmth on their bodies. They ain't seen the sun in like 4 months. They come down, they kick it, they have a good time. They don't give a damn about no Bear Bryant. They don't give a damn about no Nick Saban. And they're like, yeah, I mean, if you guys want to go do that, that's cool. But we'll be over here having our Rose Bowl with our sunset, which is the reason why we watch that game every year. Yeah. And it never gets old.
Yeah, I mean, it's like, if even if you're not interested in the matchup, that is the most aesthetically, like, just good-looking thing, right, that, for like, sports produces on a yearly basis, right? Like, top five at worst, yeah. Right? I mean, like, that's it. And they know it. And they also know how much it means now to college football as sport, you know, much like Major League Baseball, where you don't want to break tradition, right? Whether it makes sense or not, they're not going to let that happen. Like, the playoffs not going to go anywhere without the Rose Bowl. They just won't.
No, Rose Bowl, closest thing to the Masters that college football has. They're like, yo, this is what we do. Mm-hmm. This is, again, it's a parade for roses.
Oh, man.
Like, that's not some clever name that they came up with just because that's kind of what we do around here, right? It's like the Orange Bowl. Like, hey, oranges, Florida. No, we got a whole rose thing that we do down here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, man. And, you know, the other thing with it, too, and this is, like, this is probably a little bit more local, Atlanta-y, but you'll know what I'm talking about. So, you know, I'm from East Cobb. I grew up in East Cobb. I went to Walton High School. The Walton High School marching band participates in the Rose Bowl parade almost every single year.
Really?
That tells you all you need to know. If you don't know what I'm talking about, you listen to this podcast, go look up Walton High School. It's one of the best public charter schools in the United States. They participate in the Rose Bowl parade almost every single year. And that's about all you need to know about that.
That's a thing, guys.
That's a thing.
Like, I'm actually, as we wrap this up, I'm going to the Rose Parade events. I just want to see what kind of rich we're talking about here. All right, so the Rose Parade, presented by Honda. Oh, that's the only one they put on here. They got the decorating places. They got all of this. Like, this is just Rose Bowl game events. Their whole website, like, once you go to this, you realize, oh, this isn't really about a football game.
Yeah.
For these people.
I don't think most people realize that.
They don't. They're like, Ohio State, come. Don't come, whatever. Send whoever y'all got. Purdue, we'll take it.
Right, sure, why not?
I'm sure they'd like a trip out to the West Coast.
Certainly.
Listen, hold on, Harry, we got the decorating places. We got the Equest Fest, some horse riding stuff. They've got the Band Fest. They've got the Float Fest.
Mm-hmm.
All I needed to see was Equest Fest.
Equest Fest.
That told me everything I needed to know about what kind of money is coming down there for the Rose Bowl.
Yeah. I mean, it's a completely, completely different thing, man. I'm telling you. And I didn't realize that until I got older. And then you start seeing, it's like, oh, so this is what all this is. Got it. Okay. Yes. Not, I understand why I didn't know. Right. But I get it. I understand it now.
And they like, that's why we play the Rose Bowl January 1st. At 1:30 Pacific. Yep. That's when we're having the game.
Yep.
Got it? Okay. We are only a semifinal in the college football playoff if you play it on January 1st. Because that's when we are having this game. Because that's when we're going to do this Rose stuff.
Right. It's our party, right? You can show up if you want to. You can show up if you want to. If you don't like it, though, you got to go somewhere else.
And it's cool. It's cool. We are
cool
with that.
By us, right? Somebody will show up, right?
Hey, man, that is Harry Lyles Jr. Check him out on Around the Horn. Check him out on college football coverage here at ESPN, man. Doing a great job with it. Glad we got to have you on. We're going to have to do this again.
Absolutely, man. Anytime.
All right, man. And ladies and gentlemen, thanks so much for joining us here on The Right Time. Thanks for watching us on YouTube. Dan Stancic, Parker Owens, Adi Khan, handling things behind the scenes. Thank you, gentlemen. Remember, follow The Right Time. Rate us, review us, give us 5 stars. You only give us 4 stars, I'm inclined to believe. You are a hater. And we'll talk to you guys in a couple of days. Take it easy.
Thanks for checking out The Right Time with Bomani Jones Podcast.
You can listen or follow on the ESPN app or wherever you listen to podcasts.
The Right Time
with Bomani Jones.